The Texans' 9-game winning streak came to an end on Sunday with a 24-21 loss to the Indianapolis Colts. The Texans had no answer for T.Y. Hilton, who had 199 yards receiving. They had no answer for Andrew Luck, who also had a very good game once again for the Colts under center. And the people that were going up to the podium had interesting answers for Jeremy Branham, our own Texans reporter, when he asked them the tough questions, whether it was Bill O'Brien and the offense being booed for a certain play call.
Bill, what did you think of the crowd booing with about 4.5 minutes left to play?
What's that?
What do you think about the crowd booing after a play call with about 4.5 minutes left to play?
Nothing. I'm so focused on calling the game. I'm not thinking about the crowd. You know, I love the Houston fans, but I'm trying to do as good a job as I can for the team, which wasn't good enough today.
What if O'Brien?
Is that the best question? I mean, we got to have better questions than that.
He did a good job with that, O'Brien did.
Or if it was Jeremy Branham asking J.J. Watt about Jadeveon Clowney, who did not meet with the media after the game, after his horrible offsides that obviously ended things for the Texans.
J.J., what did you see on the play when Clowney jumped offsides?
What do you mean? I mean, jumped offsides? I mean, it was pretty, yeah. I think we all saw the same thing. I don't know what you want me to tell you. I mean, we all saw the exact same thing.
Jeremy Branham.
Hey. I'm going to stick up for Branham here.
Did a good job.
No, I'm going to stick up for him because in what is easy to criticize as potentially maybe an ill-advised question is that it could have uncovered something. Only those questions could have uncovered things that we never would have guessed, which would be one, is Bill O'Brien even aware of the crowd booing when in a situation
almost
where there'd be
not.
Almost no way for him to even realize they were booing because he was in the middle of calling the conservative plays that they were booing as he was calling those. I think it was news to Bill O'Brien that anybody was booing anything at any point during that season, during that series. The other would be that if JJ had said something like, oh, the center clutched the ball, you know, like we saw with the Steelers a couple of weeks back, or if the guard or the tackle simulated a snap count, which is also illegal, that would have been news, but we heard none of that.
I have a few thoughts on this. One, I'm a fraud. Total fraud.
Why?
I told Branham afterwards that the O'Brien question was a good question. I probably don't think it's a good question, but there's a reason why. One is because
it's a great question, actually.
I don't think that it was like a main part of the game.
Yes, it was huge.
It was 4 minutes to go. That was a drive that ended up in a touchdown.
The Texans run the ball every first down.
I think that's one of those that basically like they're trying to get the drive going. Quick run. They're running up tempo. This is not like the fans cheering the Schaub injury back in 2013. It was not like a big component of the game. Plus, I think it was like the second or third question asked. I think if it had been asked later, O'Brien would have been more in a mood to be like, well, I wasn't aware of that. Like, we're just calling plays, whatever. That's my thought on that one. As far as the Watt question, I thought that was a valid question just because I think what he was looking for was like, okay, like what happened in that sequence? Because it was more nuanced than just Luck went to the line of scrimmage and Clowney jumped outside. He went down,
right.
Then he went back up, then he went down. It was a whole thing.
And there are times when quarterbacks will go out, reset, call a play or give the hot call or whatever it is, and then come down. A lot of times what you fear in that instance is like the really quick QB sneak or something where as soon as he puts his hands under.
Yeah.
So there have been plenty of examples that it could have gone multiple ways there. I think it's worth pointing out, too, that it was a long fourth and one. I think that was closer to fourth and two than fourth and one.
Third and one?
Third and two versus third and one. It was at least 1.75 yards, according to the fictitious line on the field.
I couldn't tell because I was up in the nosebleeds, you see.
They're
in
the
very,
press
very
box.
High up. I do wish sometimes that we had better views of the actual game itself with the TVs that we have up there, but that's neither here nor there. That's just me being a classic media member whining about something that's really not that big of a deal. It is a big-time loss for the Texans and a big-time missed opportunity because outside of the Kansas City Chiefs outlasting the Baltimore Ravens barely in overtime with a game where they take down Baltimore 27-24, things went horribly wrong for just about everyone else in the AFC. The New England Patriots ultimately lost to the Miami Dolphins after Miami pulled off a hook and ladder touchdown to take down New England 34-33. New England continues to just be horrible in Miami, which is one of the most bizarre sequences that we consistently see in sports. The Pittsburgh Steelers lost in Oakland, for God's sake. I mean, Oakland. We're talking about the Raiders. They lost.
Can I never, ever, ever hear anybody talk about how the Texans made a mistake cutting Chris Boswell for Andy Bullock. That's all I ask. That's all I ask. I don't want to hear about it anymore. Chris Boswell is terrible. He's not good.
I feel bad for Chris Boswell in that situation because that field in Oakland is horrible. Yeah. It's not quite pallet grass level field, but it's pretty bad.
I feel bad for Gronkowski. I feel bad for Gronkowski.
He shouldn't have been out there.
It wasn't a Hail Mary situation.
Yeah.
It would have been like a 70-yard throw.
Especially Tannehill.
And they put Gronkowski out there as a cherry picker. It was like Renadive there, Vivek, the owner of the Kings, who wanted his cherry picker strategy. It was like he was calling a play on that. Yeah. It was weird. And then poor Gronk, lumbering around like he does, completely unaware. He was probably thinking about nachos or something by that point in the game. He didn't even know there was a play still going on. He has to stumble after him like a drunken Gronkowski.
That play turned dangerous real quickly. Amazing. I mean, the play of the season.
It wasn't that quick. I heard that it was the longest touchdown play in terms of actual time elapsed since they started keeping track of it in 1970, if I heard that correctly.
That doesn't surprise me. I'm just saying, like, once he made that cut, you just realize, like, oh my God, there's nobody else there
really
except
happening.
Rob Gronkowski. Yeah.
To wrap it all up, the Cowboys beat the Eagles in overtime, 29-23, taking a commanding two-game lead in the NFC East. The Sunday Night Football game, the Chicago Bears and Los Angeles Rams saw Mitchell Trubisky and Jared Goff vomit all over themselves with 7 combined interceptions and a 15-6. Good God, that game was terrible kind of game. And in the Heisman Trophy, it was not Tua Tagovailoa who took it home. It was Kyler Murray, Oklahoma's Lincoln Riley, back-to-back years with Heisman Trophy quarterbacks under center.
The hot take in the NFL will be, listen, the Bears may not be that good, especially in offense. We may not believe in the quarterback, but the Bears defense gives them a chance to win that'll be the take.
This game is the future of the NFL. It's been 2 weeks since Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, the game that was going to change the way everybody played football.
Nope.
The game that rendered defense obsolete in the NFL. No, that defense has now turned Mitchell Trubisky into a star.
God,
he's a star, baby.
He's terrible.
The Bears defense kicked their ass last night.
You can beat one of the best teams in the league with Mitchell Trubisky as your quarterback. That's what you need to know. That defense is very much relevant. I would say this. If you look at the Rams and you look at the Bears, which one's more sustainable over the course of a decade? You can see the Rams being good for a decade with Jared Goff and
yes.
Sean McVay. Defenses like the Bears don't tend to stay that good, and they are very, very good. They don't stay that good for more than a couple years in a stretch.
So the one good thing I could take away from that game was, well, at least the Bears didn't draft Deshaun Watson. At least the Bears didn't draft Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
They traded up for Mitchell Trubisky. That guy sucks. He's terrible. He's never going to be good.
I'm actually higher on him than you are, Paul. But
of course you are.
He did not play well last night. But I think that Trubisky could very well be a failure. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I believe in him. I'm saying that I'll give him an opportunity for a couple years to develop.
He could be a viable NFL quarterback.
Yes.
And this is the problem. Is he as durable as Cam? Is his body going to take the beating? Because it's going to require him being a running threat if he's going to be a viable NFL quarterback.
And he just missed 2 games before last night.
Yeah, exactly. Just like Lamar Jackson, is he going to stay healthy?
Good question.
I don't know if Lamar Jackson will be on this earth 2 years from now. I'm terrified for the lad.
All right, let's take all your phone calls here. Texans fall by 3, 24-21 to Indianapolis, 713-572-4610. Biscuit on Mad Radio. Biscuit, good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, top of the morning to you fellas.
Hey. Top of the morning.
Hey, Mike, give me a little leeway on this. This is a question I've always wanted to ask someone, Seth, that's in the know, in the circle of the NFL or whatever. And in other sports, like I told you, producer, like in baseball, when a left-hand batter comes up, you know, they go get a left-hand pitcher for the matchup. Or in basketball, you see the high pick and roll to get a certain defensive player on your best offensive player. It seems like the only people in the NFL that play the matchups are Belichick and Brady. And my point is, example I'll give you is like the Cowboys last night. Going into the game, they knew that the Eagles had no secondary. And they decided, you know, they're a running team, so they're going to run the ball instead of exploiting the weakness of the other team.
Yeah.
So why do teams – well, if you were the coach, would you rather go to your strength or go to what the other team is weak?
Well, I guess I would disagree with you that I think teams are very specifically worried about matchups every single week, but then the team that you're playing also knows what its weaknesses are. So if you have a weak secondary, you're going to try to disguise that weakness as much as possible. You're going to give the secondary help, which tends to open up things in the run game. And it's the easiest thing in the world to second guess as a fan, and I'm one of them. I'll be the first to second guess coaches in not making the right decision. But look at the Texans. Teams attack their weaknesses all the time. Their linebackers have issues in coverage. They made some mental errors in coverage yesterday that were very much exploited by the Indianapolis Colts. The Indianapolis Colts also figured out a way to stretch and test the secondary. A Texans weakness in, which is like, I don't mean to say that Texans secondary is a complete weakness. It's a weakness versus certain types of matchups. And they figured out a way to get T.Y. Hilton vertical and test those matchups. So I think they do. Where we get frustrated is when, frankly, like Bill O'Brien, I can criticize him for certain things, but also acknowledge that he's working with an incomplete tool set yesterday. And look, I personally think Joe Webb should be better schooled up on how to play a slot wide receiver if he's your next option going in there. I don't know why Joe Webb's on the field as a veteran dude that's supposed to be able to do a bunch of things if when he's put into that role, he can't actually do it. So that's both a Joe Webb, a coaching, a Brian Gain issue. That's one thing. But the other is that, okay, you could say, why aren't they using the tight ends more? Well, because both of them are rookies.
And they got to help out with the offensive line.
Right. They've got to help out with the offensive line. They've got to chip. They've got to keep the running backs in the block. So when we're sitting here screaming about how Deshaun Watson needs to get rid of the ball earlier, you know what's happening a lot of the time? The tight ends and the running backs are staying in and helping out with pass protection. They're getting out on their routes late. There aren't a lot of early options. So sometimes it's Deshaun's fault. Sometimes it's the offensive line's fault. Sometimes it's the fact that you can't quite trust Jordan Akins or Jordan Thomas as blockers. They weren't running the ball well at all. And like, so it's a multitude of things. It's frustrating because you want to be able to just pick out one thing. And if you spend too much time on Twitter, you'll run into a lot of that. They've got multiple things they have to fix right now. There's multiple matchups that they need to worry about. The thing that makes me optimistic, because I'm actually as optimistic as Mike is on this, I'd rather have it be a bunch of small things, because you can incrementally improve a bunch of those and make a big difference between now and the playoffs versus like one huge thing. On the defensive side of the ball, it might be one huge thing, which is, what does this team do versus fast wide receivers?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, one of their main problems is, and I said this throughout the pregame show, is they don't even have a guy they can put on T.Y. Hilton. Like, I mean, period. Like, you can put five guys on him if you want, but I'm saying, like, they do not have a single player. Because one thing that, for example, the Rockets are a disaster, right? But at least last year in the Western Conference Finals, like, they could put guys on Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant, right? Like, they had actual defenders that you could put on them to make them work hard. This Texans secondary doesn't have that. They do not have a guy they can even start out credibly on T.Y. Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a guy.
Well, and that's where Romeo Crennel is between a rock and a hard place, and how aggressive do you want to be?
Because
they weren't getting enough of a pass rush to help those guys out. They weren't getting enough of a pass rush to help the Texans defensive backs play zone. But if you start playing man, that gives them a pass rush, but it puts even more pressure on them, and you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Let's go to Steven on Sports Radio 610. Hello, Steven. Hello, Steven.
Steven!
I would say the one thing the Texans pass rush can do, because you saw they had their shots at Andrew Luck, but he's so damn strong.
Oh, he is strong. Yes, he is.
He escapes grasps. It's like a horror movie or something.
He was outstanding on Sunday.
But if they were more disciplined in their pass rush, that would help out a lot. I mean, they flush guys out of the pocket routinely, and there's no recourse.
Let me try Kyle on Mad Radio. Kyle, good morning. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if you had the same take I had in the end of this first half. There was about a minute 35 something left, and they were third and long, and there was about 18 seconds or so on the clock for the snap
clock.
And they snapped the ball with that much time left, and it was third and 12 or something. Very small probability of completing
right,
the first down. Yeah, they gave them 18 seconds there to get the ball down the field to keep the field goal, and even then after that, it was third and long for the Colts at their end of the field, and Brian went down and he called a timeout with a minute left and gave the Indianapolis Colts even more time to move down the field. Am I looking at it too conservatively? It just seems like poor clock management again by the coach which, you know, you got to, in these tight games, you got to have great clock management.
The second timeout, I don't necessarily have a problem with, because I think they thought that they actually might be able to get the ball back. But the first one, they should have let that play clock bleed. They should have let it bleed. I mean, I don't understand. It's 3rd and 12. You're at midfield. Like, yeah. Why are you snapping the ball with 1:20 left when you're at midfield? You know, you may as well burn as much clock as you possibly can in that spot.
Well, and some of this too, some of this comes down to Deshaun Watson's youth.
Exactly.
And I'm not
going
to overly kill
Watson.
Him. I think sometimes people forget that Deshaun Watson's barely played more than a full season's worth of games. But I also, when it comes down to operating up tempo versus bleeding time off the clock, one of the tough decisions the Texans have to make right now, and this doesn't apply to that specific situation necessarily, but the Deshaun's more comfortable going up tempo. And,
oh, yeah.
And that's great, except that it's also, it makes it difficult that when you need to conserve a lead or when you need to bleed time or try to win the time of possession, he's not in his most comfortable element mode. The other thing that happens too is, yeah, look, the offensive line is not that great. And I think people keep wanting to make arguments that they're a good offensive line. And for the life of me, I don't understand why. It's like, hey, Deshaun barely got hit. Well, they passed the ball 12 times, okay? Like, that's he's not going to get hit that much. And they're using 7 guys to block. They're not that good of an offensive line. The longer you bleed the play clock, the more time you have for the defense to rest and get set and understand exactly what's going on. So it does a little bit of a disservice. But that's not applying to this situation necessarily.
Seth, I know you've been seeing a lot of commercials recently, cologne commercials.
Oh, they're weird.
They have been really bizarre.
I've been watching some of my wife's television with her, too, and I see these perfume commercials, which are just as weird. They're so strange.
Right. So one of them has Natalie Portman. There's another one with Johnny Depp where it looks like he's on peyote and he's just like digging ditches in the middle of the desert. Well, actually, there's a new cologne. This is a brand new commercial. And I don't know if you guys saw this, but it's about a new fragrance from Jadeveon Clowney.
If you're not where you're going before you're supposed to be there.
Luck, long catch, trying to get the Texans to jump off. Luck under center, and Clowney jumped.
Neutral zone in practice.
Yep.
Defense number 90.
Are you ever actually even there at all?
I think we all saw the same thing. I don't know what you want me to tell you. I mean, we all saw the exact same thing.
Off C-Day, the new fragrance by Jadeveon Clowney.
Obviously glad it worked in our favor.
That's good. I'm going to buy that cologne this Christmas.
I like it. Yes, I like it. It's a high variance cologne. It's high performing, low down. So I don't know.
A bunch of taglines for that cologne when you want to get closer to somebody even faster than you're supposed to.
Basically, the cologne could work out great for you or terribly.
America.
That's really the tagline.
Boundaries, limits. These are of no meaning to me. Let me cross your Gaza Strip.
Man, it's really
Jeez. I'm glad he would be horrible at Middle East relations.
Coming up.
Finally, we've got a treaty. Ah, damn it. Jadeveon blew it.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Seth Payne has a theory, and I really like this theory.